I'm Jonathan Bastian, back with Life Examined on KCRW. We just heard from Ryan Holiday, an expert on Stoic philosophy and the author of Discipline is Destiny, talk about the power of constraint and focus, especially today when we are inundated with choice. So how can we turn discipline into practice? What's the science behind changing our behavior? And are there ways to kick bad habits? Joining me next is Katie Milkman, professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. She's the author of How to Change, the science of getting from where you are to where you want to be. Katie Milkman, welcome to Life Examined.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're finally getting around to talking about something that's really important, which are habits, what they are, how they work. But before we kind of get to any more nuance about them, how do you think about habits at this point? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think of habits as behaviors that we repeat without a huge amount of effort involved. So when you brush your teeth most evenings, you're probably not having to go to a checklist to remember it's time to brush my teeth. It just sort of happens naturally. When you shampoo your hair in the shower, it happens naturally. There's a lot of things we do that aren't incredibly effortful because we've done them so many times before. They just feel like a part of our lives and a pattern. And I think that's what most people mean when they talk about habits. And it's fairly close to what an academic would say is the definition. It's an automatic-ish behavior that you've repeated so often it becomes quite easy to do without a lot of cognitive effort.
Mm. And so what do we know about just kind of what's happening in the brain, or what's the science behind some of this stuff?
Yeah, the science suggests, and by the way, a lot of the science has been done on animals, which is really interesting, but the science generally suggests that there's sort of, and this has been popularized, by the way, by a lot of great books, that there's a habit loop that can be formed where you repeat a behavior over and over again. It gets rewarded in some way, and that reward can be literally you're paid for doing it. It can be people give you applause. It can be you track it in an app, and then you feel great seeing a streak accumulate. Any kind of positive reinforcement, once it's on autopilot, you really don't have to think deeply to engage in the behavior. Mm. And it gets put on autopilot through that repeat reward cycle. It's almost like practice. When I think about it, it reminds me of the way I learned to play piano as a kid, right? You go, you sit down at the bench, you play this song over and over and over again. Maybe there wasn't huge reward, but maybe somebody applauds. You just keep doing it, and eventually you can play the piece. Mm. And we all kind of know things we've practiced until they become more innate. And that is really the same as what's happening with habits, whether that's biting your nails or brushing your teeth or making coffee in the morning. It's a similar process where you've repeated it so often that it becomes innate and easy to do, and you don't have to think about it anymore.
Well, I guess to me it gets to the question of how they do form and the extent to which we're even aware of them forming. So maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
They certainly form without intention in many cases. Otherwise, none of us would have bad habits because
right.
we would never invest in forming bad habits, right? So that's the dark side of habit is that things like nail biting, or you can think of a whole host of behaviors we want to quit that aren't addictive, by the way, because that's a whole other category. If you start talking about something like smoking, I don't think of that in the same category as habit because there's a chemical dependency that builds up. But if you think about something like smartphone use, checking your email constantly, these are all things where maybe we wouldn't have wanted them to develop, but we got that cycle of we repeated the behavior. There was some little reward that arose with enough frequency to make us excited about it. And say nail biting, it relieves some stress. And then this repetition leads to an automatic behavior. So it happens unconsciously in some cases or not deliberately. But the nice thing about habit is that science does suggest we can be deliberate in trying to form good ones when we'd like to see something positive change in our lives. And that's the really exciting frontier from my perspective, is that there's an opportunity to deliberately use what we know about how also the bad ones form to create good ones in our lives.
Yeah, so let's get there. And maybe first say why it can be so hard, though, initially to break bad habits.
Yeah, well, there are many reasons that it's hard to break bad habits. One is that once they become automatic, you're no longer deliberately engaging in the behavior, right? It's easier to stop doing a thing when you know you're doing
it. Right.
And so it's hard to put all the things in place, all the boundaries in place, the more frictions we can put up in general to make it less automatic. So I actually do have to think consciously, the better we do in breaking are bad habits. And I should say that there's really wonderful research by Wendy Wood of the University of Southern California, who I consider the world's expert on habit, looking at how important those kinds of frictions are. Any barrier you can put between you and the automatic behavior so you have to stop and think really helps. And then you get to make a decision. The problem with habit is you're not making a decision. Yeah. You're on autopilot.
Yeah. What would an example of friction be? I'm just curious.
Yeah. Thank you for asking me to be more concrete. So you might put on gloves if you're a nail biter, right? Mm. And now all of a sudden to get to my nails, I have to take off my glove and I'm going to, right? So that's an example. But if you think about something like smartphone use, maybe you put a lock on your phone that's a 10-digit code you have to enter to get in. So it doesn't just recognize your face or your thumbprint. And now you have to type that thing in. And as you're doing so, you're going to think to yourself, I am typing in 10 digits. Oh gosh, right. Do I want to be looking at my phone right now? So you can put frictions in place that force you to pause and think for a moment before you just mindlessly engage in a behavior. And that gives you at least an opportunity for the thinking part of your mind instead of the automatic part of your mind to decide, is this what I want to be doing right now? Mm. P.S. That's not enough in many cases, because you might say, yeah, I really do want to bite my nails. I'm stressed. And then later regret it. So there's other things you can do. You can put stakes on the line. So there's something called a commitment device that can be very powerful in breaking bad habits. There's a big distinction between, of course, habits that are addictions and habits that are just behaviors we don't like. And yet, commitment devices can be helpful in both cases. And one of my favorite studies of how powerful they are is actually looking at cigarette smoking and how people try to quit. And a randomized controlled trial was done by Dean Carlin and collaborators. He's a professor at Northwestern University, where they randomly assigned some people to all the standard smoking cessation tools, you know, a program that would try to help people who wanted to quit. And other people got all those tools and a bank account where they could put money that they knew they would have to give up if they failed a nicotine or codeine urine test in 6 months. Hmm. And guess what? The people who had a way to put money into this account that they would have to give up, a commitment device, those people quit at a 30% higher rate than the ones who got the standard quit smoking package. And I think that's just an extraordinary result. There are lots of other findings showing how useful commitment devices are, but in this really extreme bad habit that's even in the addiction space, we see these benefits. So I think more people should consider commitment devices, and there are tools anyone can use. There are websites like stick.com, beminder.com. I have no affiliation with these websites. Sure. There are probably more than that I don't know about that can help you literally put money on the line. You'll forfeit to normally a charitable cause and a referee who will report on whether or not you've succeeded. And of course, you can set this up with somebody you know who cares about you and wants to help you break a bad habit.
Well, so then let's talk about what it takes now to form good habits. I mean, I think it's been really helpful hearing about ways we can get out of the bad ones. But talk to me about the latest research on the formation of healthy ones.
Yeah, so there's definitely research suggesting you want to have consistent context cues to some degree. So a context cue would be something like a reminder or a place or a location where I consistently try to engage in this behavior, and then a way to reward myself for success, whether that's just tracking it, putting a little check mark on a piece of paper, having an app that watches how many steps you're taking today and gives you a check mark when you get 10,000 steps. These kinds of small celebrations or tracking can be really helpful to reinforcing that positive that you need to build a habit. And the repetition is really critical. So when you, for instance, at New Year's make a resolution and sort of have this burst of enthusiasm, a lot of people say, well, you know, what good is it if it's going to be extinguished by February? The research shows that if you put more attempts in, right, you say try to go to the gym more in January because you're extra enthusiastic, there is carryover. So the more you repeat, the more likely you are to have some durability. It's not 100% carryover, but when you have that burst of enthusiasm, repeat the behavior as often as you can. There's no question. The more you repeat, the more it becomes ingrained and starts to feel automatic. Mm. So celebrate the successes. Repeat when you have those bursts of energy as much as you can, because that's how you get the carryover. But let me tell you about a study that I did that has actually kind of a surprising twist and a more counterintuitive message. So I was really interested in the science of habits. I teamed up with some collaborators and with Google to try to figure out if we could build a program that would help Google employees exercise more regularly and build good habits around this. And we randomly assigned about 2,500 employees who wanted to exercise more regularly to two different programs that were designed to test different theories of how habits are formed. One of the programs encouraged people to be really consistent in when they exercised throughout the week and throughout a month. We did a month-long sort of startup period. The whole goal of this was, let's design a startup program that will kickstart lasting habits. So we wanted to measure what happens after the program ends. So one version of the program during the startup month, lots of focus on getting people to go to the gym at the same time of day during the same 2-hour workout window that they've told us is ideal. They get reminders to go then and they get payments for going to the gym at that time, but not at other times. We have a second group that also has a 1-month startup program, also tells us the 2-hour window that's best for them to exercise is also encouraged to go at that time, but they get incentives for going to the gym anytime. So what we're essentially doing is creating a structure where one group of people is rewarded for going to the gym more consistently than the other. And indeed, that's what we see. They both go at, these two groups go at roughly the same frequency over the startup month, but one group makes 85% of their gym visits in the same time window each day. And the other group only makes about half their visits at that time. So they're more variable in when they're doing it. And what we find is actually quite surprising. We were pretty sure that it would be better to be really consistent in when you visit the gym. But when we look at who maintains their exercise more after the program ends, we were surprised to find it was the people who'd been a bit more variable in when they went. So why? What's going on here? We dig into the data. First of all, we weren't crazy. The people who had been really consistent in when they went, they continued to go a bit more often at that sort of sweet spot time they'd identified than the other people who had been encouraged to go whenever. But if they miss their sweet spot time, say it's 7 a.m. that they like to exercise, if they miss that workout, they do not show up. It's that or bust. The other group has developed what I call more elastic habits. They've learned to get to the gym at 7 a.m. with some regularity, but when they miss 7 a.m., they have a backup plan. They go at noon, or maybe they go at 4 p.m. And net-net, that leads to more consistent engagement in these behaviors. So what I think is really important to think about as you're trying to build habits is there is some benefit to consistency. You know, find a consistent place. All these people are always working out at the same gym. You know, motivate yourself in a consistent way. Ideally, reward yourself to the extent possible, whether it's by tracking yourself in an app, celebrating with friends. But don't be too rigid in the way you structure your workouts because, or any other behavior, your practice on Duolingo, your meditation, whatever habit you're trying to form, try to actually mix up a bit when you're in startup mode when you do it so that you teach yourself to be resilient. When there's a traffic jam, you can't get to the gym at the regular time, you can still squeeze it in at a backup time. And that net-net is really important to building consistent good behavior because life does throw us curveballs. Everything isn't always set up perfectly to align. And to the extent that you're prepared for that and you've practiced dealing with that, you end up building more lasting habits.
Yeah, super interesting study. I'm glad you shared that with us. And just a few more practical questions and tips here. I mean, is it true that it's kind of 30 days to create a new habit, 60 days? Do we have any data or research that shows how long it takes to form a healthy habit?
Yeah, so that is a myth that there is no magic number. And in fact, Wendy Wood of University of Southern California, who's an expert on habits, dug in to try to figure out where that 30-day myth came from. And she thinks she's traced it to a study that was done asking people who'd had plastic surgery about how comfortable they felt with their new face. And then it takes about 30 days in surveys for people to say they feel comfortable with a new face. So that is apparently the origin of the 30-day myth. There's no good evidence for that. And I've done this machine learning work actually with Colin Kemmerer of Caltech in the lead, where we have tried to figure out with big data sets looking at hand sanitizing behavior and also exercise, how long does it really take to form a habit? And the answer is it depends on the context. We see that in gyms, it takes order of magnitude a couple of months on average, but with a lot of variability across people to form a habit. And when it comes to caregivers learning to sanitize their hands and sort of make that an automatic process going in and out of patient rooms, that takes more order of magnitude a week or two. So it's context dependent. It probably depends on the complexity of the behavior you're trying to put on autopilot, the frequency with which you're repeating it while you're trying to build a habit, and there is no magic number.
So finally, I mean, for those that have probably fallen into the trap of making New Year's resolutions and having them kind of fall apart, just what would you say or simplify to them as like, all right, here's how to get started on trying to have a few more healthy habits in your life?
I think the number one most important thing that people get wrong when they're trying to build habits is that the key is to make it something that you want to repeat. You want to make the behavior as pleasant for yourself as possible, so it won't be an uphill battle to do it over and over again to the point where it is on autopilot, and so that it will feel rewarding while you're engaging in it. So rather than trying to drag yourself early in the morning to a miserable workout on a painful machine, if you want to get in shape, think about signing up for Zumba classes with a friend who will hold you accountable, where it'll be fun while you're at the gym, and don't do it at a painful hour of the day. What can you do to make what would feel like an uphill battle enjoyable? And there's great research by University of Chicago psychologist Ayelet Fishbox showing we have the wrong intuition about this. We think we should look for the most effective route to achieving our goals, but when we actually pursue them in ways that we find more fun, that's what leads to persistence. There's lots of different ways to do it. You can make it social. I've done research on something I call temptation bundling, where you link something that you find really enjoyable with a behavior that would otherwise feel like a chore, like only watch your favorite TV show while you're exercising at the gym, and now you look forward to it. That can work. But generally, find ways to make it fun. Then habits will start to come more naturally because the repetition and the reward are all going to fall into place.
I've been speaking with Katie Milkman, professor at Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for joining us. This was really interesting.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Katie Milkman is the author of How to Change, The Science of Getting from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. And that's all the time we have for this week. Our producer is Andrea Brody. As always, we'd love for you to join the conversation on our Facebook page to talk about habits, discipline, and everything you heard today from Ryan Holiday and Katie Milkman. You can find a link at kcrw.com/lifeexamined. I'm Jonathan Bastian. Thanks as always for joining us. We'll see you next week. Have a wonderful day.